with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with the director of the Illinois Respite Coalition, Tina Urich. But first, disability news for the week of March 8, 2021. Federal authorities are being asked to examine barriers that may be keeping people with disabilities from receiving COVID-19 vaccines. 13 U.S. senators sent a letter earlier this month to the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division and the Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights, asking them to make sure that processes for distributing vaccines in each state complies with the Americans with Disabilities Act and Sections 504 and 508 of the Rehabilitation Act. The senator cited a recent report from Kaiser Health News, which found that nearly all of the 94 federal, state, and local websites with COVID-19 vaccine signups or information that they checked did not meet accessibility standards. They want the Justice Department and HHS to work with states to assure that the registration process online or by phone is fully accessible and that vaccination locations are equipped to meet physical needs. According to their letter, there should be socially distanced places for people to sit if they cannot stand for long periods, and individuals with disabilities should be able to be accompanied by a caregiver. In addition, distribution sites should account for people who may not be able to wait for a long time due to sensory issues. Plain language, visual storyboards, and other easy-to-understand explanations should be provided both on vaccine-related websites and at distribution locations to ensure cognitive access, according to the letter. The senator said that, quote, states should conduct outreach to individuals with disabilities and caregivers to assure them that their needs can be accommodated, end quote. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recently updated its guidance for COVID-19 vaccine distribution to emphasize the importance of disability access, stating that, quote, jurisdictions should consider the unique needs of residents, such as people with disabilities or cognitive decline and their caretakers, as well as those with limited access to technology when evaluating vaccination location, accessibility, communicating vaccine information, and scheduling appointments, end quote. The $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief plan under consideration in Congress includes a major investment in home and community-based services and stimulus payments for more people with disabilities. The bill, approved by the Senate in a close vote late last week, would funnel an estimated $9.3 billion extra to states for Medicaid programs that enable people with disabilities to live in the community. The bill also includes $1,400 direct payments to individuals earning less than $75,000 annually, which would go to people with disabilities who meet the income requirements, whether or not they're considered dependents. In addition, the legislation would provide funding for COVID-19 vaccines and testing, as well as money for schools, state and local governments, and other needs in response to the pandemic. The Senate did not approve the proposed increase of the federal minimum wage of $15 an hour, nor did they approve elimination of sub-minimum wages for people with disabilities due to a ruling by the Senate parliamentarian. The bill now returns to the House for approval on changes made on the Senate side. The influx of cash for home and community-based services will come in the form of a 7.35% increase in the federal government's share of spending on the program for 1 year. According to Nicole Jorwick, Senior Director of Public Policy at the ARC, states would have, quote, great flexibility in how they could use the extra funds. They could increase pay for direct support professionals, reduce waiting lists for services, and ensure that programs for people with developmental disabilities can reopen safely during the ongoing pandemic, among other options. Since the pandemic started, disability services have been dealing with falling revenues as programs were forced to close, and they faced higher costs for personal protective equipment, COVID-19 testing, cleaning supplies, and other changes. Providers are bracing for more financial pressure as states and local governments tighten their belts in response to revenue shortfalls because of the pandemic. Advocates have spent the last year asking Congress to allocate funds to ensure that the nation's system of community-based services and supports could be sustained, but no help has been given to date. This time, with funds already included in the bill, things are looking different, they say. According to Sarah Meek, Senior Director of Legislative Affairs at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR, said she couldn't remember another piece of legislation that included an increase in the federal share of spending just for home and community-based services. Meek said, quote, "The HCBS system was already underfunded prior to the pandemic. Those issues have only been exacerbated by the staffing and safety challenges of the pandemic, so this funding is sorely needed. We can't wait for it to get signed into law so states and ultimately people receiving HCBS and the direct support professionals that support them can start feeling some relief," end quote. Netflix is pledging to do more to give greater representation of people with developmental disabilities on their platform after a report finds that representation of some groups is lacking in its original films and television shows. The report released late last week was conducted by Stacy Smith at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, and she reviewed dozens of films and series released in 2018 and 19 to measure representation by gender, race and ethnicity, LGBTQ+, and disability. While the study gave Netflix good marks on gender equality and for making progress in inclusion of those from some underrepresented racial and ethnic groups, it found that the LGBTQ+ community and people with disabilities rarely see themselves in content on the streaming service. Characters with disabilities accounted for just 5.3% of leads and 4.7% of the main cast in films and series on Netflix, the study found. When all speaking characters were factored, only 2.1% had disabilities. This is far short of reflecting the 27.2% of the population who have disabilities, the report noted. When individuals with disabilities were shown, they were likely to be male and most were white. Slightly more than half of these characters had physical disabilities. In response, Netflix said it will establish a fund that will invest $100 million over the next 5 years in organizations that help bring underrepresented communities into the television and film industries and in programs to train and hire new talent at the company. And finally, the Zoom video platform has become omnipresent as the COVID-19 pandemic has kept people from meeting in person. Now they say they are enhancing services in order to be more accessible to users with disabilities, starting with adding automatic closed captioning to its free accounts. The functionality, which will be called live transcription, is expected to be available to all users this fall, according to Jen Hill, product marketing manager at Zoom. In the interim, Zoom will offer automatic closed captioning to meeting hosts upon request, Hill said in a blog post about the new feature. According to Hill, the change is part of an effort to, quote, provide a platform that is accessible to all of the diverse communities we serve, end quote. Hill said Zoom currently provides manual closed caption, screen reader support, and other accessibility features. And that's the news for this week.
Zoom, 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 zoom. The world is in a mess. With politics and taxes and people grinding axes, there's no happiness. Zoom, 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 zoom. Rhythm, lead your race. The future doesn't fret me if I can only get me someone to slap that bass.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat, and I'm pleased to introduce to you my guest for this week, Tina Urich, who is the director of an organization called the Illinois Respite Coalition. And I'm sure she'll tell you all about it. Welcome to the show, Tina.
Oh, thank you for having me, Vicki.
So why don't we start out by having you introduce yourself and how you ended up in this role, and then we'll talk more about the actual organization, okay?
Sure. Again, my name is Tina Urich, and I am the director at the Illinois Respite Coalition. I was a volunteer on the board for the Illinois Respite Coalition for, I'm going to say over 10 years ago. So about a year and a half ago, we were going through some changes, and then I was asked to be the director of the program. Prior to that, I was a director of a volunteer respite program through an organization called Clearbrook, and I ran a respite program in, we had four site-based programs in four different counties, and then we also had an in-home program in three counties, and that was all utilizing volunteers.
Great. So before we get into the organization itself, it might be a good idea to define respite, because there are a lot of people who listen to this who probably understand what that terminology means, but also a number of people who are not familiar with disability lingo in general. So if you could explain it in a way that helps those folks to understand what we're talking about.
Sure. So respite, the word really just means a break. And when I'm talking to a caregiver who calls, and I still do, I get caregivers who are like, what is respite? And I'm like, you know what? It's an opportunity for you to take a break, to have a chance to take a breath, knowing that your loved one with a special needs is in caring, capable hands. And it's really important, you know, and, you know, you have a lot of caregivers like, oh, you know, I don't even know what that is. But it's, you know, studies have just really shown that, you know, respite really helps to relieve that caregiver burnout from all the emotional and physical exhaustion that can develop through the responsibilities of supporting and caring for another individual.
That's a great explanation. So now let's talk a little bit about the Illinois Respite Coalition and what it provides to families and caregivers in Illinois.
Oh, thank you. So the Illinois Respite Coalition, or IRC, it started as a grassroots organization back in 1998. And, you know, today we are a nonprofit organization, 501c3, statewide. We provide information and referral on respite services. And we do that across the lifespan. And really what that means is, no matter your age or special need, if you're in need of respite, you can call us. And then we will talk, and then we can find out and refer you to appropriate services in the area that you live, okay, you know, depending on the age and special need.
And is this limited to people with disabilities, caretakers for people with disabilities, or is it more broad than that?
Sure. So the information and referral that we do statewide is very broad. It can be, a daughter calling because she's concerned about her mother because her dad has dementia and she needs help. Mm-hmm. It can be a friend saying, my neighbor is going through chemo and she's got little kids. Is there anything that, you know, that is around to help them? So So statewide, we do that. And then we are really fortunate that we received a grant from the Department of Human Services to provide in-home respite. And for that grant, that's specific. And that's a grant that provides families or provides respite to families who have a loved one with a diagnosed intellectual or developmental disability. And through that grant, we can provide caregivers a break of 180 hours a program year. So those are two things. And then the third thing is when we have funding, we have an emergency respite care grant. And that's a grant to help provide some emergency assistance, temporary emergency assistance when funded. So we're waiting to hear about funding for our emergency respite care grant.
Have you found that it's people who are financially in need that are most likely to contact you, or are a wider, more broad sample of the population in need of that respite care?
You know, I really think it's broad. You know, I mean, it's we get a lot of referrals from, you know, social workers or schools, you know, for families, especially, you know, during, you know, COVID, and some families were calling and they're like, you know, there was two of us able to help support and work through. We never thought we'd have to call you, mm-hmm. For any kind of support. You know, but we need it, whether my loved one had to leave the state to find another job or do whatever. So it's you know, it's more broad. And even today, you know, you get people who call and they're like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, don't be, you're strong. You're calling, you're finding out, you're taking care of yourself. You're putting that oxygen on you like we all know we should, but a lot of us don't.
Yeah. So how does this work? You referred to the fact that, you know, with COVID-19, that a lot of people are struggling in their homes and not being able to take breaks from their kids. How does that apply to the Respite Coalition in that people are providing direct care for families?
Yeah. So really, you know, great question. I mean, what we did is we, you know, really make sure to follow the CDC recommendations. We have masks. We have, hand sanitizers. We made sure to be in contact with our families and our respite providers to make sure that they feel safe. And we have practices in place, too, that we ask them to do prior to, providing respite. And that's that. Temperature check, any type of symptoms, make sure to cancel. And when we've had a respite worker who's like, you know, I just want to let you know it's a cold, it's not COVID, don't worry. I'm like, you got to still get that COVID test and it's got to come back negative. Mm-hmm. We had some families that during that time were frankly like, you know what, this is our little bubble and we're going to make do. And we had others that were just like, you know, I'm up 24 hours a day. I need to make sure that I can still get that respite. So we really tried hard to make sure that we followed policies and that both our respite providers and our families felt safe. And really, too, during that time, we've had some families who hit the pause button, but are coming back. And, you know, we were really fortunate that we didn't shut our doors. We didn't stop answering phones. And we, as long as there was that need out there, we're like, okay, we're going to try hard to still try to help you.
Yeah. And so are respite workers considered essential workers? Are they eligible for vaccine at this time?
Yes, they are. And actually, too, through the Champaign public health department, you know, we received an email to, we're starting to get a group together for some of the respite workers and through PACE Inc., who notified us and say, come on board, you know, we're going to get our personal support workers, get some of your respite providers together, and if they haven't gotten their vaccine, they can get it. So, yes, this is the time, you know, for them, and, you know, also for the caregivers who have individuals with disabilities.
Yeah, I mean, the Champaign Public Health District has done a great job with vaccines and vaccine distribution. But still, it's really tough for people to get appointments. I just got my notification on the PACE program today. My daughter has not yet had her vaccination, so we're going to hopefully get into that that particular mode to be able to get her and her personal support workers, you know, hooked up with vaccinations as well. But it's really a worry, I know, for families that they have kids, you know, adult children even, who are very susceptible to any kind of virus or bacterial infection. So I'm sure there's a lot of concern out there for bringing, you know, essentially a stranger in the home to support them when they don't really know them so much. How do you answer that question?
So, you know, to me, the most important piece for bringing somebody into your home, you know, and I'm going to take a quick step back. Through our in-home program, family members can refer a family member to us to train and pay, as long as that family member is over 18 years of age and not living in their home. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, you have people who don't know anybody, and then it is somebody that they don't know. And how do you do that? Well, what we do is really concentrate on the match. So it's really important to find out what the family's needs are and what, you know, what they're really looking for. And then we will match them with a worker who we feel can really meet those needs. And we start off either by a conference call or a Zoom meeting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we start this meeting with, hey, listen, this is just an opportunity for us to get to know each other and to talk. No decisions is going to be made at this time. But I'll start with the family and say, hey, tell us about your needs. Tell us about, you know, your child. And then we give the respite provider an opportunity to ask questions. And then it's the family's time, you know, to hear about the respite provider straight from her or him. And usually from that meeting, you can kind of get a feel. But, you know, I will still say, all right, you know what? I want you both to think about it. And feel free to get back to me and let me know your thoughts. And this way I feel it takes the pressure, and it's just not like, oh, you know, Tina feels this would be a great fit, but I don't.
Yeah.
And I got to take them anyway. So really I say to families, you have the say every step of the way. And so does the respite worker. If they feel that this is something that they can't commit to, or it's just not the right fit, then we don't start with you. Then it's not the right fit. It's not going to last. And having a revolving door isn't the answer. So I'm happy to say that it takes a little longer, but we've had really great results and matches by just making sure that we kind of take our time to find the right person.
Well, that's good news. I have one more question for you.
Sure.
When our daughter was younger, we never were able to use respite services because we had three children and only one of them had a disability. So the agency would say to us, well, you can have respite for your one child, but we're not going to provide it. Has that changed any, or is it still essentially the same?
So that's a great, great question. So it's based on the agency. Our philosophy is we want to support the whole family. So, you know, we will tell a respite worker, there's four. You know, there's four, four children in this family, And, you know, those siblings can be great help. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. So that the caregiver has that opportunity to spend some one-on-one time or not, and just, you know, have some alone time. But yes, we are, our respite providers support the whole family.
About how many respite providers are there in the Champaign County area, roughly?
Oh, that question I didn't prepare for. That's a good question. We serve over 21 counties. So I am going to say that for our respite providers in the Champaign County, 20, maybe 25 mm-hmm. Respite providers.
Well, that's a fairly significant number. And so what's the process then? Just a phone call or an email to you guys? Is that the way it works? Or
walk through that a little bit. Sure. So it all starts with a phone call or an email to us. And for the family and the respite provider, we explain the whole process. So we let them know that eligible families receive 180 hours of program a year. Mm-hmm. And we let them know that our pay is $13.70 an hour. The family has an easier process. When I call them, we do an intake, and then there is a fillable application for them to complete, and then the family has to provide proof of diagnosis. And that's just if we were ever audited by DHS, they could see that the funding went to eligible families. It's the respite providers who have more of a process. And I just come up and tell them that. I'm like, you know, I'm going to send you a new hire packet, and it's a packet for a reason. Mm-hmm. You're going to have an application in there. You're going to have two background checks. If you're not in the fingerprint database, we are going to ask you to go get fingerprinted. And, of course, we'll pay for that. There is two online trainings, and then there is all of the paperwork needed to work, and then, you know, for payroll purposes. Mm-hmm. If they are not CPR certified, then we also have a training available for that. So I can tell you motivated providers have done it in a day. But it's usually, you know, a few days before we can get everything back.
Yeah, so you're looking for families to be served and people to serve them, both ends of the spectrum.
Yes, yes, we are. We still have openings in our grants to serve more families, and I want to get them in.
Absolutely.
And that's why I so appreciate, you know, to Vicki taking the time and this opportunity tonight. We do serve Champaign County. We have openings, and myself and our wonderful assistant program, assistant Kara, we work really hard and quickly to try to get that matching, that paperwork, and get you up and running in respite so that you can start to take that break.
Great.
And that breath.
The website is?
So our website is www, and then it's full IllinoisRespiteCoalition.org.
And I'm sure if you Google Illinois Respite Coalition, you'll probably get to it as well. And the phone number.
Sure. Our phone number is 630-207-8479.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Tina. Tina, you're director of the Illinois Respite Coalition. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has a diverse group of 30 licensed therapists providing individual, group, family, and marital therapy. Elliott Counseling